Bring in E.J. Antoni. He joins us now. He's a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation and, of course, the in-house economist for the Vince Colonnade Show. E.J., happy Memorial Day to you. Glad to have you with us, sir.
Vince, same to you as well. Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of McCarthy's announcement here? We can get into some of the more of the details here, but it doesn't look like these are government cuts. This is just we won't grow government by quite as much.
Right. I mean, frankly, I don't even know why we're calling this a deal. This is a giveaway to the hard left. I'm struggling to find what significant parts of the Limit, Save, Grow Act are still contained within this new, again, quote unquote, deal. McCarthy is just basically, even though he held all the cards, he ended up folding.
And it's quite obvious to any outside observer that the White House did not want to let the debt ceiling lapse. They went months saying that there would be no negotiation. And then in these last 2 weeks, they suddenly assigned a bunch of negotiators because they don't want the political fallout from this. We've seen even NBC admit last week that Republicans had won the debt ceiling messaging war by passing that piece of legislation that you just referred to. So to your point, McCarthy clearly held all of the cards here. Why didn't he achieve more?
I am sitting here scratching my head trying to figure out exactly that. I mean, we literally went from a $1.5 trillion increase in the debt ceiling, which, by the way, about $800 billion of that would, so more than half, would have been used up on day one as soon as they passed this, because that's about how much the backlog in Treasury borrowing would have been. So that would have been a pretty significant limit on Treasury's future borrowing going forward. And in exchange, we went from that to a literally unlimited debt ceiling increase. Some people are throwing around the number $4 trillion. This is not a $4 trillion increase on the debt ceiling. It is unlimited until January 1st, 2025, at which point, for those playing along at home, we will have a lame duck Congress and president, most likely, definitely a lame duck Congress, who aren't really going to be accountable to voters. So then we can have an even bigger increase on the debt ceiling.
Yeah, okay, so I want to pause on this for a moment. You said that it makes it unlimited. So this is the difference between, quote, suspending the debt ceiling and raising the debt ceiling. There's a categorical difference between those two things, correct, EJ?
Exactly. So, for example, what we had during COVID, because we just had no idea how much we were going to need to borrow and how quickly, Congress simply suspended the debt ceiling until a future date. In other words, they said there is no longer a limit. That's very different than saying there's still a limit, but it's just $1 trillion more or whatever the case may be than what we had previously.
Yeah. And also, it's such a cowardly way out of these debates in Washington. These lawmakers don't want to affix their signatures to legislation that declares what our debt ceiling will be. So they suspend it in order to duck the actual number.
Right, exactly. And once again, they are suspending it until a point when a bunch of people who are only a few days, not even a month away from leaving office, we are basically getting all of these people together who have no accountability to the voters, and they're the ones who are going to make decisions on our financial future. No, thank you.
So let me move to another item here where you kind of thought that McCarthy may achieve something else, which is getting rid of the 87,000 IRS employees that the Biden administration announced that it would be time to hire. And when McCarthy became Speaker of the House, he ran on a commitment to get rid of them. It was like a day one commitment. And in fact, right when he came into office, they did pass a piece of legislation designed to defund the 87,000 IRS employees. But, of course, that got no traction because he had no leverage at that point over these Democrats. But now he does, or at least he did going into this weekend. And instead, what we're left with is that of the extra $80 billion in funding that the IRS was set to receive, it's been shrunk down to $78.1 billion. So we went from $80 to $78.1 billion in this debt deal. Put differently, that is a 2% reduction. That's a 2% reduction. So that is nothing. That is nothing, EJ. And so as Congressman Dan Bishop put it this week, and Miranda Devine highlighted her New York Post column, that means instead of 87,000 IRS agents, we'll just be getting 85,260. Is this a good deal?
No, once again, this is a horrible deal, and I don't even like using the word deal because it's just a massive giveaway. I mean, whether we're talking about the IRS, whether we're talking about the student loan bailout, the RAINS Act, you know, the unspent COVID money, I mean, you name it. Even the work requirement deal was a joke.
Was it? The work requirement deal is nowhere near what Kevin McCarthy is selling?
No, I mean, so people have to understand that for some of these programs, like food stamps, for example, there's already a work requirement in place, but it only goes up to age 49, and all this would do is raise it to 54. Oh, yes, because our big concern are 54-year-olds getting their free food stamp money. No, we're talking about prime-age workers with a lot of these programs.
Right.
And so now you have, you know, there's not even a requirement, literally anything on Medicaid, literally no work requirements at all in the new deal that they're passing. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, once again, I just can't wrap my head around why we went from what was basically already a compromise to just giving away the farm here. I just can't understand it.
So as I was citing the numbers, and these all come from the United States Treasury, by the way, the numbers of government spending in 2022, fiscal year 2022, you have $6.27 trillion spent by the government, which is a quarter of our entire economy. The last year before the pandemic, 2019, it was 5.14. That was $1 trillion less than we spent in 2022. Why are they backing up to 2022 spending levels, EJ? Where should the government be if it was living within its means?
If we're living within its means, I mean, maybe we should go back to what the founders thought was appropriate, which would be 3% of the economy, not a quarter of the economy. I mean, there is no reason why we need to be using 2022 as a baseline. It is bloated with all kinds of not just COVID spending, but all kinds of ridiculous additional spending pushed through by this administration and also when the Democrats had control of the House as well. So we should at least be going back to 2019, if not further. I mean, there is absolutely zero reason why any of this COVID funding needs to be used as a baseline going forward. And again, one of the big disappointments in this deal is that instead of clawing back all of that unspent COVID money, we're only clawing back about half of it. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, here's how Ron DeSantis put it this morning. He was on the Fox News Channel. He described this to Kayleigh McEnany, the former White House press secretary.
Well, prior to this deal, Kayleigh, our country was careening towards bankruptcy. And after this deal, our country will still be careening towards bankruptcy. And to say you can do $4 trillion of increases in the next year and a half, I mean, that's a massive amount of spending. I think that we've gotten ourselves on a trajectory here really since March of 2020 with some of the COVID spending. It totally reset the budget, and they're sticking with that. And I think that that's just going to be totally inadequate to get us in a better spot.
Are there going to be opportunities as the year barrels along for some of these government funding bills to further restrict this spending, EJ?
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Potentially, it's possible, but we have to remember that it's also possible for things to go the other way. There's a lot of federal bureaucracy here that can actually take advantage of loopholes within this law and increase spending, not reduce it. You know, and this was one of the things I just, again, was sitting here scratching my head as Kevin McCarthy is talking about how if we use CRs, continuing resolutions, instead of establishing budgets, you know, it's going to punish Congress. It's going to cut about $15 billion. That's not that much out of a budget that, as you were just saying, is over $6 trillion. So the cuts here aren't that significant, except the ways that that we have workarounds. So, for example, the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, the head of that part of the federal bureaucracy can actually waive a lot of the cuts here. And going back to what we were talking about before with work requirements for things like SNAP, TANF, Medicaid, et cetera, right? A lot of states, these are sometimes state-run programs or state-executed programs. They're just funded by the federal government. So states get to change some of the rules within their own boundaries. And that means the states a lot of times get to waive these work requirements. So even the limited amount of work requirements that we're getting in this so-called deal, get ready for all the blue states to just waive it right out of the gate.
Finally, EJ, our debt keeps climbing. We see interest rates going up. The debt doesn't show any sign of slowing down whatsoever. And the government still has to make interest payments on the debt, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And get ready for that to continue going through the roof. You know, one thing that a lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, the Fed's done cutting rates. I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe they are. Jerome Powell has proven to be very unpredictable. But you know what? Inflation expectations right now are as high as they were last summer when inflation was over 9%. In other words, people have completely lost confidence in the Fed's ability to really get inflation under control. And inflation expectations are one of the key things they look at when deciding what to do with rates. So I think rates have a very good chance of going up again, and that's going to put even further stress on the budget. And don't forget, as time goes on,
sure,
more and more of the debt that was previously at low rates is getting rolled over into higher rates.
And
so it's not only a higher rate, but more of the budget is included.
And on inflation, uneasiness about inflation does have the effect of raising prices, doesn't it? Because you have businesses who are of the impression that inflation is out of control, as it has been, and they'll adjust their prices accordingly. They're forward-looking. They don't want to get destroyed. So they'll do some price lifting. And the end result, of course, is that inflation builds upon itself, no?
To a certain extent, but what also happens over time is as it turns out that those expectations were accurate, that the Fed does not really have a handle on inflation, then what happens is the profits never really materialize. And so the business sits there and says, okay, thank goodness I raised my prices.
Yes.
Whereas if the Fed, it won't, but if the Fed really did get things under control, businesses all of a sudden would realize, oh my gosh, I'm making a lot of money. But the one single competitor who goes back and cuts prices gets all of the market share. We're not going to see that happen, though, because, again, the Fed has no idea what they're doing, and they don't have control of the situation.
All right. EJ Antoni from the Heritage Foundation and the in-house economist for the Vince Colonnais Show. Appreciate your time today on Memorial Day. Thank you, EJ. Really appreciate that.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.